I guess it mirrors the situation all around Australia, which is that it's been a spectacular disappointment from whichever vantage point you look at it. You know, for example, the economics and the Mary Kathleen mine in Western Queensland, there was just such huge hopes that that was going to be a massive money spinner. But they only ever produced 4,500 tonnes of uranium, which is as much as they produce every single year at Ranger and Olympic Dam.
What years was that? Was that going?
This is going way back to the 50s, and then they restarted it again, I think, in the 70s. But yeah, you know, from an economic point of view, it was just a spectacular disaster, and environmentally as well. And Mary Kathleen is quite iconic because in 1976, some Friends of the Earth people went to work and found a box there, and I guess their initial reaction might have been that it was a bomb, but in fact it was a box of leaked documents from Mary Kathleen Uranium Mining Pty Ltd, and it was truly explosive in the sense that it blew the lid on a global uranium cartel, and that led to international controversies and fines totaling many hundreds of millions of dollars. And as well, these leaked documents revealed shoddy environmental practices at Mary Kathleen and a cozy relationship between Bob Hawke and the uranium mining executives, and it contained advice on how uranium mining companies could circumvent safeguards to sell uranium to companies that had not signed the non-proliferation treaty. So yeah, I mean, that gives you a bit of a sense. Sloppy environmental practices, dodgy proliferation policies, and a complete failure to deliver on its economic promises.
Well, and let alone pure, straight up, unadulterated underhandedness or backdooredness and that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, it's so secretive, and you know, that's just, it still applies today. The industry's claim is that they've significantly improved their performance, but well, you know, they just haven't, and I could cite 100 examples of that, but just to give you one, there was another leak of information from the Roxby Downs uranium mine just a couple of years ago, and that was photographs of leaks in the tailings dam there, and the company's response, BHP Billiton's response, was to threaten disciplinary action against any workers caught taking photos of the mine site. So, you know, totally unacceptable practices now, as it was in the 70s and 80s, and same back in the 1950s.
And so what, to your knowledge, would be the outlook for Queensland if it were to all go ahead, as far as timescales and what kind of extent they'd be looking at?
Yeah, well, actually, I've just been writing an email to a journalism student about that very topic, and you can hardly have failed to hear some of the propaganda about how uranium's going to generate $18 billion for Queensland and $900 million in profits, and the journalism student was saying, how could anyone possibly say no to that, and how could anyone possibly say that the environmental problems outweigh such mega profits? But if you do the figures and you do them accurately, then a more likely outcome is about $3 billion in total export revenue. Keep in mind that's total export revenue, not annual export revenue. And total government royalties, more like $75 million rather than $900 million. So again, anyone who's followed the government and industry propaganda about $18 billion in export revenue is going to be sorely disappointed.
And Campbell has clearly stated himself too that they have done no research. Zero.
Yeah, they have done no research, and you know, they've done no research into the proliferation risks, and they've done no research into Australia's complete neglect of safety problems in our uranium customer countries, with the most disastrous example being Fukushima, where it's been blindingly obvious for over a decade that the safety standards were a long way short of acceptable in Japan, with TEPCO, the operator of Fukushima, being the very worst of the examples. And yet the Australian mining companies just turned a blind eye to that, and so did the successive Australian governments. So the mining companies and Australian governments are partly culpable for the Fukushima disaster, because they could have stepped in, they could have insisted on improved safety standards, but they chose instead to turn a blind eye.
And the only thing I've heard account mentioned as far as a reason is stuff that the government has said in terms of new exports to India, but I can't imagine that's going to be the hugest of markets.
No, well, you know, you wonder what planet these people are living on. They probably do think that Australia can make lots of money by selling uranium to India, but India's demand for uranium is very small. I think it's roughly about 1,000 tonnes a year. So, you know, that's 10% of Australia's total exports or even less than that. So, you know, there's just no way you can do the figures that would show significant profits from exporting to India, even assuming that there is significant nuclear power growth in India. It's not going to be a big money spinner for Australian uranium mining companies. And, of course, with India, the problem is that it's outside of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. It's never signed it. So by selling uranium to India, we're sending a message to the whole world that it's okay to have nuclear weapons, it's okay to be outside of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and you can still get Australian uranium, and that's just a horrendous precedent.
Mm-hmm. Very dangerous. But how's it going, though, globally in the post-Fukushima stage, as far as there were countries that were closing down operations, and, you know, where is nuclear power at on the world stage?
Well, it's stagnant. The global nuclear power capacity is about 370 gigawatts, which is about 370 reactors. And it's been at that level for the past 20 to 25 years. And even though we've had all this hype about a nuclear renaissance over the past decade, it's still stagnant. Yep. And there's a huge amount of uncertainty about what's going to happen in future. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it remains stagnant for the next 20 years. There might be some modest growth, but a really important point there is that most of the world's fleet of nuclear power reactors are middle-aged. So if we fast forward 10 or 20 years, most of them are going to be old-aged, and there's going to be also dozens, perhaps hundreds of controversies there over how long reactors should be allowed to continue to operate, even as they start to suffer the effects of old age, such as increasing leaks and embrittlement and so on. And another problem for the industry will be that in 20 years' time, they're going to have to be building reactors at a furious rate just to stand still, just to maintain that pattern of stagnation, let alone to generate any growth, because as those older reactors go, are finally decommissioned.
And I take it they are not being built at a furious rate?
No. Well, there's a lot of reactors which are under construction, around about 70 or so, but it's very unclear how many of those reactors will actually, you know, construction will be completed and they'll move into operation. Of those 70 reactors, quite a number of them have been under construction for over a decade, so they've already had significant hiccups and in some cases they've been stalled. And of course the Fukushima situation just cast such a huge shroud of uncertainty over the whole situation. Japan's only got a couple of reactors up and running at the moment, and no one can really guess whether most or all of the Japanese reactors are going to go back online or how that's going to play out. And China's just announced that its plans and its expectations for nuclear power growth are far more modest and slow than it had previously projected. And of course there's countries like Germany which had a lot of power reactors, and they've made a decision to get out of nuclear power altogether. So yeah, it's not a good time to be investing your hard-earned money in the nuclear sector, Wave.
So Jim, bringing it back to Queensland then, what will be the approach to this a baseless announcement by our illustrious can't do Campbell?
Well, you know, the environment groups, and there's also opposition from farmers groups, and there's opposition at potential ports. But we need to build this opposition. You know, the reality is that uranium has been off the agenda in Queensland for over 20 years now. So we're starting from scratch in a sense, and it's just really important to build that opposition. And it can be done, and we can look at places like Northern Territory, where a company called Cameco wants to build a uranium mine at Alice Springs, but that has been stalled because of a fantastic community campaign being run from Alice Springs. look at South Australia, and plants to mine in the Arkaroola Wilderness Sanctuary have been stopped permanently because of a fantastic community campaign. So, you know, this debate over uranium mining in Queensland can be won, but that doesn't mean it will be won. It really depends on people getting active, and as we always say, it's better to get active today rather than radioactive tomorrow.
Yes, so we'll come back to a good old community campaign.
Yep.
So, is there any other bits to add on the whole topic that you can think of, Jim? We've been talking to Jim Green, the National Friends of the Earth Nuclear Campaign Coordinator.
Well, there's quite a few issues bubbling away. You know, there's still this chorus of propaganda for nuclear power. I don't take it terribly serious because I'm sure that even a government that's living on a different planet like the Campbell-Newman government, they would have to be aware that nuclear power's a no-go area in Australia at the moment.
Yeah, it's still high in that regard, as community opposition in general.
Right. I mean, especially when you look at opinion polls on whether people would accept a nuclear power plant being built in their vicinity, anywhere near their homes, and there's massive opposition to that. So, but, you know, there's other fights as well. There's Martin Ferguson, or Martin Fukushima, as we now call him, and his plan to build a national nuclear waste dump on the land of Muckaty traditional owners in the Northern Territory. And that's reaching a really crucial stage as well, because the federal court case will probably be resolved in the next 6 to 12 months. And that federal court case is traditional owners challenging the nomination of their homeland for a national nuclear waste dump. And again, that's an example where there's a really fantastic community campaign, and a really broad one as well. It's not just anti-nuclear and environment groups. It's traditional owners leading the campaign, great support from churches, from trade unions, from all sectors of society.